Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. Black leaders hold a meeting in New York today at the headquarters of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People to discuss Andrew Young's resignation last week as UN ambassador and to decide whether it should lead to a shift in U.S. Middle East policy toward closer ties with the Palestinians. The UN Security Council is scheduled to begin debate on the Palestinian issue tomorrow, with Young presiding. Today's conference at the NAACP follows other talks elsewhere on the same subject, reported by Lem Tucker.
The black ministers from the Southern Christian Leadership Conference concluded their foray into international diplomacy with meetings with Israeli and American Jewish leaders. Israel's UN ambassador said he told them they did not understand the complex issues of the Middle East, and he regretted their statement of support for the PLO. Reverend Joseph Lowry, president of SCLC, said his group had no apologies for backing a homeland for the Palestinians and at the same time supporting the nation of Israel. Finally, Lowry summed up what the 2 days of meetings had accomplished, saying, "We have sown the seeds for peace. It's up to the participants. History and God will have to assess our efforts." But one thing seems sure for now. The addition of domestic political problems to the already confused Middle East situation is probably going to make the issues even harder to resolve. Lem Tucker, CBS News, New York.
Urgent discussions on those issues were held yesterday in Washington, and Bernard Kalb tells us about them.
It was almost as though the administration had launched a rescue operation to rescue itself from an image of disarray on Mideast policy. On the record and in volunteered background comments to reporters, officials seem to be fighting to control the damage. One official with the president said about all this, "There's less here than meets the eye." An official at the State Department tried to treat it as a non-issue, saying, "This is not a story." Secretary Vance, on the record, emphasized that unanimity had produced a new recommendation on Mideast policy. This unanimity achieved at an urgent White House meeting of policymakers, with Vice President Mondale assigned to sit in for the president, an indication of the delicacy of the situation. The stakes in all this are high. If the administration fails to bury the impression of disarray, it could be haunted by an image of divisiveness on the Mideast problem at a time when it already has its hands full with problems at home. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
Special Ambassador Robert Strauss, who took part in that White House meeting, said on NBC today that the U.S. has decided not to introduce a U.N. resolution supporting Palestinian rights. Strauss said President Carter approved the decision. President Carter, still cruising slowly down the Mississippi aboard the Delta Queen, attends a town meeting this morning in Burlington, Iowa, where Lee Thornton reports.
The city of Burlington, site of today's town meeting, is in Des Moines County. In 1976, the county gave Jimmy Carter 53.5% of its votes. And while the president's popularity is sagging elsewhere in Iowa, experts on local politics say here Jimmy Carter is bigger than ever. He has good friends and strong supporters in this traditional Democratic county. Mr. Carter came to Burlington twice as a candidate. Predictions are 15,000 of the city's 37,000 people will turn out to say hello today. Income for Burlington's population is higher than the state average, and the city has few serious problems. Nevertheless, experts say labor is unhappy with the administration's wage guidelines, and they say many here, as elsewhere, worry about the cost of energy and rising costs in general. In an open-air setting on a bluff high above the Mississippi, the president will address such concerns in the forum his aides believe puts him in the best possible light. Lee Thornton, CBS News, Burlington, Iowa.
Last Friday, before boarding the Delta Queen at St. Paul, Minnesota, the president held a brief conference on the grain millers' strike that has troubled the upper Midwest for almost 2 months. In general, the president took a hands-off attitude on grounds that the strike was not having a nationwide effect, hence didn't qualify for action under the Taft-Hartley law. Rich Holder of CBS radio affiliate WCCO in Minneapolis has the latest on that problem.
Midwest agricultural leaders are hesitant to criticize the extent of President Carter's involvement to end the grain miller strike until they've given the renewed negotiations a chance under the direction of Wayne Horvitz. However, Cy Carpenter of the Minnesota Farmers Union says the White House should be pressing for round-the-clock negotiations.
More than anything else, because it will bring to the attention of those that are involved and with the responsibility to reach some settlement with public visibility, that they are expected to apply themselves until it's resolved. And I really believe if it was brought to the attention of the public that the governor and the president and others were insisting that they negotiate around the clock, they can resolve this.
Carpenter says he doesn't know how long Mr. Carter should wait before taking additional action, but he says if the negotiations continue deadlocked, it won't be long before we have the national emergency required for implementation of the Taft-Hartley Act. Rich Holter for CBS News, Minneapolis.
Members of the Auto Workers Union are halting work for 6 minutes today to write postcards to President Carter and their members of Congress. The postcards read, quote, "I'm tired of being ripped off by the oil companies, OPEC, and the lack of an energy program. When Congress returns, I want them to enact an effective energy program," unquote. Union spokesman Don Stillman says there was a lot of talk about this at the time of the president's energy address, and then Congress went home essentially without doing anything. Now, says Stillman, we're hopeful of stirring things up again. The big three automakers plan to dock the workers for the time spent writing the cards. For 6 minutes, that would mean about 85 cents. The Presidential Commission on the Three Mile Island nuclear accident holds further hearings today in Washington, and Diane Sawyer reports that it will question five witnesses, all from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
The lead witness, Joseph LaFleur, Deputy Director of International Programs, will be asked about an incident at Westinghouse Reactor in Switzerland in 1974. The incident partly paralleled the early stage of the accident at Three Mile Island, but the Swiss reactor operators caught the problem in just 3 minutes and no radiation was released. The president's commissioners want to know why that incident wasn't reported to the NRC and a notice passed on to other plants. The commissioners think the Swiss incident might have forewarned the operators at Three Mile Island. The remaining four witnesses today will be asked about internal NRC memos which express concern about faulty reactor pressurizer valves. The NRC dismissed that concern, calling the valves just an operational inconvenience. But several months later, one of those valves stuck open and compounded the accident at Three Mile Island. Diane Sawyer, CBS News, Washington.
India's President Sanjiva Reddy this morning dissolved Parliament and ordered new nationwide elections in November. Reddy took this action to end India's worst political crisis since it achieved independence in 1947. The move was recommended by Charan Singh, who resigned as Prime Minister day before yesterday, and also by former Prime Minister Indira Gandhi's wing of the Congress Party. More than $2 million in cash was stolen yesterday from a Brinks armored truck in New York City. Mitchell Krause has details.
It was apparently a well-planned, carefully executed case of grand larceny, one of the biggest to hit the Brinks company ever. And it was all the FBI needed to cap a day in which 10 more traditional bank robbery attempts occurred. The Brinks heist took place at the underground loading dock beneath Chase Manhattan Bank headquarters, where deliveries of all sorts take place on a routine basis. This time, a familiar fish delivery truck appeared, but it carried no fish. Instead, several masked men jumped out, seized a Brinks guard and a bystander, and calmly proceeded to steal 34 bags of money that had been destined for delivery to Chase branches. Then the robbers drove the stolen fish truck up the long ramp, past a guard booth, and into the city streets, where they abandoned it a few blocks away, their hostages still inside, but the money gone. How did the robbers penetrate the Chase security system? Could they have been insiders? And where are they and the money now? Those are some of the questions weary FBI and local police officials are trying to answer today, a day they hope will not see a continuation of the epidemic that has pushed the number of bank robberies in New York City so far this month 42% above last August. Mitchell Krause, CBS News, New York.
James T. Farrell, the author of many novels, among them the Studs Lonergan trilogy, died this morning in New York at the age of 75. Death resulted from a heart attack. The price of gold reached record new levels today, well above $311 an ounce in both London and Zurich. The U.S. dollar is largely unchanged on the foreign exchanges. The Zimbabwe Rhodesian Air Force today raided a black nationalist guerrilla base 90 miles inside Zambia. It was the first announced attack of its type in nearly 2 months.
This is The World Tonight. Good evening. I'm Marlene Sanders, CBS News, substituting for Douglas Edwards. Tomorrow, the UN Security Council is scheduled to take up a controversial resolution on Palestinian rights. That debate has triggered a flurry of diplomatic activity. Bernard Kalb reports.
The U.S. is now engaged in a last-minute diplomatic scramble, the first objective to try to win a postponement of tomorrow's scheduled debate on a resolution on Palestinian rights. Chances of success are rated as virtually hopeless. So, objective number two, to try to get the other council members not to push for a vote on the resolution, a vote that is expected to produce a U.S. veto, something the U.S. would prefer not to cast. It would intensify Arab distrust of the Carter administration. On this point, that is the no-vote approach, U.S. officials say they have a long-shot hope that that is possible. And the reason they offer is this. Those countries supporting the resolution can use the council debate as a platform to promote the Palestinian cause and then carry the issue to the Conference of Non-Aligned Nations in Havana next month. There, Arab countries with the Palestinian issue still very much alive will try to isolate the U.S. among third world countries. In short, the U.S. will find itself under Arab attack with or without a Security Council vote. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
President Carter continues his riverboat travels down the Mississippi, and among the stops today was one in Burlington, Iowa, where he attended a town meeting. Richard Roth has a report.
The questions ranged from one on nuclear power, the president said some dependence on it is inevitable, to one on Amy's violin lessons. Mr. Carter said she plays well considering her talent. There were several energy-related questions. The president assured a seed corn salesman there would be enough fuel to harvest fall crops, but said it would be expensive. He told a woman who asked about his energy plan, "I can't force Congress to take action, but you can." Another woman asked the president to explain a news report she had heard about America selling oil to Iran.
They ask us to sell them back about two-thirds of one day's supply of kerosene to meet the needs of the families in Iran. And since they sell us more than that every day, I personally approve the sale of that much kerosene to Iran.
Back on the Delta Queen after what was called lousy fishing, the president and the boat encountered lousy weather, a storm with 75-mile-an-hour winds and sheets of rain. The boat was intentionally grounded, but within 30 minutes, the storm had passed, and the president was en route here for a visit tomorrow to the home of Mark Twain. Richard Roth, CBS News, Hannibal, Missouri.
More news after this.
I'm confused. What do doctors recommend for pain today?
Doctors' number one choice is the pain reliever in Anacin.
Doctors' number one choice?
A recent report shows the ingredient in Anacin was recommended 5 million times last year for pain of headache, backache, minor arthritis, and muscle aches. Anacin is strong, a combination of medical ingredients, free of stomach upset for millions.
So the ingredient in Anacin is the doctor's choice.
Doctors' number one choice. Get Anacin. Use only as directed.
Looking for something, Betty?
For relief, Mrs. Rollins. Hemorrhoids again. Pain, itch.
Try this.
Preparation H?
Many folks tell me it temporarily relieves occasional pain and itch of hemorrhoidal tissues. Fast.
Really works?
Folks swear by it. Even helps shrink swelling of tissues due to inflammation.
I'll try it.
Betty, feeling better today?
Thanks to you and Preparation H.
Preparation H relieves pain and itch, helps shrink swelling. Use only as directed.
More than a million members of the United Auto Workers Union took a few minutes out of their workday today to sign postcards calling on the President and Congress to get cracking on the energy problem. A report from Chris Kelly in Detroit.
The union dramatized its protest by calling thousands of workers off their jobs to sign pre-printed postcards, which read in part, "I am fed up with being ripped off by the oil companies and OPEC and the lack of an effective energy program." Those cards are being collected by the UAW and delivered to the White House and members of Congress. Union volunteers even visited unemployment offices to sign up workers who have been laid off. The big three automakers say they'll withhold pay from those who stopped working today, and Union President Douglas Frazier called that absurd.
I think it's stupid and petty and short-sighted. After all, the energy problem is their problem as well as ours, and the auto industry is in difficulty right now. Over 70,000 people laid off, purely attributable to the lack of an energy policy.
Frazier also criticized Congress for adjourning without passing an energy program and predicted the union protest will result in 5 million cards being delivered to Washington. Chris Kelly, CBS News, Detroit.
More news when The World Tonight continues.
Lily Cosma of Oakland, California, tells how Western Union came to the rescue.
My son is an unemployed actor in Hollywood. He says, I have to get my own costume, a Zoot suit. So I pick up the phone, call Western Union, and sent the money order.
To send money, call Western Union toll-free and charge it to your MasterCharge or Visa account. Day or night, it's Western Union to the rescue.
The only way that I can get money to him in a hurry is by Western Union.
Every moment's a special moment on Kodak film. A warm body entering a cold lake. That's worth a picture. The bend of a pole with a fish on the line. So's that.
What a difference it makes when you got what it takes. What a difference it makes when you got it.
Your family's special, especially on Kodak film.
The Senate may be on vacation this month, but when the lawmakers return in September, there may be a real committee showdown over federal spending. Phil Jones reports.
Despite warnings, seven committees have virtually ignored the decision by the full Senate last spring to cut total federal spending by $5.6 billion beginning this fall. These cuts were to have been made by simply reducing existing federal programs. So far, the committees have saved only 30% of what they were ordered to save. The seven committees that will be asked to cut more include Appropriations, Finance, Environment and Public Works, Veterans Affairs, Armed Services, Agriculture, and Governmental Affairs. Senate Budget Committee Chairman Edmund Muskie has decided that his committee will not take the blame for the Senate's big spenders. Shortly after the Senate returns next month, Muskie will force a showdown on the Senate floor. A provision in the budget resolution will be invoked for the first time in history, forcing the committees to defend publicly their extra spending or to make the required reductions. Unless these committees make these cuts, the 1980 fiscal deficit will be some $3 billion higher than the expected 1979 fiscal deficit. Phil Jones, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Some discouraging economic news out of Washington today. The Commerce Department reporting that new orders for durable goods received by the nation's factories dropped by 5.2% in July. This followed a 1.5% drop in June. The Wall Street Report in a moment.
Reach out and touch someone.
Hello?
Ring, ring.
Mom, is that you?
Ring, ring.
Who's there?
Jamaica.
Jamaica who?
Jamaica called your mother lately.
Oh, Mom.
Ring, ring.
Who's there?
Haiti.
Haiti who?
I Haiti nag you, but I really miss your voice.
I get the message.
Ring, ring.
Oh, okay. Who's there?
Otto.
Otto who?
You really ought to call more often. Your dad misses you, too.
Okay, Mom, I promise.
Ring, ring.
You're cracking me up. Who's there?
Dixon.
Dixon who?
Your brother Dick's on the phone every weekend.
Oh, how is Dick? I haven't talked to him in a long time.
Ring, ring.
Who's there?
Max.
Max who?
Max, no difference, babe. We love you anyway.
Reach out, call up, and just say hi.
Ring, ring, Mom.
Oh, who's there?
Boo.
Boo who?
Don't cry, Mom. I told you I'll call real soon.
Reach out, call up America.
The Bell System would like to remind you to give someone a ring.
That's ring, ring, dummy.
Stocks were mixed again today on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down a fraction of a point at about 886. The average price per share on the New York Exchange was up 3 cents, up a penny on the American. Volume on the big board totaled nearly 38.5 million shares. Amex volume was about 4.75 million. Wall Street on This World Tonight.